exciting guest today, I personally feel, because many of you are very familiar with Veterans Today. And this is by divine grace that I was inspired to interview him this morning, I should say, huh, Mike? Feels like it's been all night long. And for those of you that have not been following VT or VeteransToday.com super diligently, they literally are one of the most profound, their strength in the fact of what they're presenting to the world as far as what's really going on the ground, and we talk about that all the time in all of our other interviews. I felt very compelled today to bring Mike on to really hunker down into the complex situation over in the Mid East. And for any of you that are not familiar with Mike Harris, he is the financial editor of Veterans Today. He's also a radio show host, a former GOP finance chairman, and a gubernatorial candidate for Arizona, and a senior vice president of Adamus Defense Group. Gee, I don't know if I can keep going on with this, Mike.
Stop it some more.
He's an expert in full contact mixed martial arts. His long-term expertise and such has gained him a lot of respect and the nickname Iron Mike. He was part of the Veterans Today group that attended the Damascus conference to combat terrorism and religious extremism. We will be diving a little bit into that today. Mike gave about 25 television interviews that were broadcast to literally millions of viewers in Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, and Iran. And in these interviews, Mike emphasized and supported the historical declaration by keynote speaker, Veterans Today senior editor and chairman Gordon Duff, which everybody knows Gordon Duff. His name's very, very commonplace. Anyway, with that said, I just want everyone to hold tight because we've got some really interesting information to review today. And Mike has always got his head and his finger on the pulse of what's really, really going on. And Mike, I would like to start the interview out with, most people are reading so many variable articles out there about the news in the Mideast. There's so many different perspectives about what's really going on there. What do you feel really sets Veterans Today's broadcasts and interviews, et cetera, apart from the rest?
Well, first, let me say thank you for inviting me on.
Oh, you're welcome.
It is my honor and privilege to be your guest.
Thank you.
And then to answer your question, what separates VT from the mainstream media is that we actually go there and we talk to people. We meet people. We go out in the field. We talk to the man in the street in Damascus. We talk to the man in the street in Homs. We go out and see real people, and we make connections, and we make friends. And we make friends with regular people. We make friends with government officials. The Syrian Minister of Justice, I've been his guest in the country twice now. Met with the Chief of Intelligence for Syria. Met with the Grand Mufti several times. And the Grand Mufti, for those of you who don't know, he is the top Islamic scholar, legal scholar, as well as religious scholar for the country of Syria. This is a very senior man. And by the way, his eldest son was murdered by ISIS about 16 months ago. And so if there's anybody who's got a dog in the fight against ISIS, it's the Grand Mufti. Yeah. But you will never meet a kinder, more generous, loving, genuine human being who is truly looking into the spiritual nature of why we are here as human beings as this man. And
fabulous.
Like I said, he is the genuine article.
Fantastic.
It just radiates from him.
Well, so, thank you for that.
That's how we do it is by going there and we don't take a story off of writers. Reuters and write a blog about it and say, well, in my opinion, because I got this off of the news wire. No, we go, we see, we talk, we experience, we eat the food, we drink the water, we talk to the people who were there, and that's what gives Veterans Today its edge, because there's no filter between us and what our perception of what's really going on is.
You know, it's one of the reasons I was really motivated to interview you is realizing that you have somewhat of a intimate, I'm going to use the word, behind closed doors relationship with the top Syrian government, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So you're getting this direct hand, right?
Yes, and we've met with a dozen of the Syrian generals who are running the operations on the ground against ISIS. Met with them. We've briefed them. They've briefed us. We had information to share. They had information to share. And collectively, between the collaboration, we have a much, much more accurate idea of what's really going on there compared to what you see in the mainstream media. And folks, let me tell you this. Whatever you see on television in the mainstream media, it's bunk. It's BS. It is stories that have been crafted to shape your opinion in a way that they want your opinion shaped. And if they have to eliminate data or leave out things or embellish things in order to get you to think and feel a certain way, they will. And so you really have to be a bit discerning when you watch the mainstream media, because 98% of it is politically driven for their agenda.
I couldn't agree with you more. And the other thing I'd really like you to do, because you're such an expert in this particular field, and that is please help all of us who try to read and follow this information. And it becomes quite complicated because there's so many different factions and people involved. Now, you have the Russian Federal Army that's just kind of, you know, entered the scene. And you also have the free, I thought that was interesting, the Free Syrian Army, correct?
Oh, it's not free at all. It's already cost the U.S. Taxpayers over $500 million. It's the expensive Syrian Army. Let's put the right spin on this. They've trained a total of six people for that $500 million. And then all the munitions and other weaponry that they were given in order to fight the Assad regime, they have since that tendered it over to the people at ISIS. And so there's a lot to be exposed here. And this is an in-depth subject. And one thing people need to realize, the U.S. government is not a monolith. It is very fragmented. There are competing interests within the U.S. government. Some of them really believe in the Constitution. Some believe in what our official foreign policy is, but others don't. Others think they're smarter. Others have their own agendas. Others see ways of profiting from this conflict, this turmoil. And, you know, one thing I hope everyone realizes out there is that there are certain people and certain interest groups that profit off of human suffering. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that we're targeting. Those are the ones that have to be dealt with.
Oh, man. God. Well, now, how about Hezbollah? Is that how you pronounce it?
I was a guest of Hezbollah for about 6 days in Lebanon. We were in the compound. We were sort of locked down there by them while they were trying to take our pulse and figure out who we were, what we were, and interrogations. Let's call them interviews.
Wow.
But we were interviewed at length by Hezbollah management, and we passed.
And so now, what is your perception of what role they play within this conflict overseas?
Well, first of all, Hezbollah is a militia. They've been recently taken off the terrorist watch list because they are a legitimate political faction who is trying to defend their people in their country. You have to remember that Israel has gone into Lebanon numerous times and kills and murders people. That's what Israel does. And if you sit there and you're unprotected, unorganized, you're cannon fodder. I mean, you're going to be slaughtered by the thousands. And Hezbollah is in response to Israel's aggression. This was a self-organizing group that came together to say, look, we can't let these Israelis come up here and keep killing us. Let's organize ourselves and let's fight back.
That's fantastic.
Let's get some resistance.
Well, now, I noticed in one of the articles that I reviewed that you said literally that the counterterrorism group is comprised of the terrorism group was comprised of over 100 countries and four terrorist organizations.
Well, you have to understand what ISIS is. ISIS is a construct. The primary players behind ISIS are elements within the US CIA, Israel Mossad, Turkey. Turkey is up to their eyeballs in this. They are the ones who are enabling Syria to be looted. Mm-hmm. And then you have Saudi Arabia as well. But these are all foreign intelligence organizations that have created a terrorist threat. Now, you have to understand, terrorism has become an industry. And there's two sides to the industry. There's the side that commits terrorism, that is the threat itself, and there's the side that is counter-terrorism, which is there to fight and eliminate the terrorist. Okay, well, they both get budgets, and if there's no terrorist, there's no budget for counter-terrorism. Mm. So understand the dichotomy that is at work here. No government agency ever wants its budget cut. So do they really want to eliminate terrorism, or do they want terrorism to be a perpetuating source of cash flow for their agency going forward? You know, this is how sinister, this is how dark this is, this is how disingenuous this whole thing is. It's really a sad state of affairs, and it's all about the profit, the money.
That's
and
so
if
sad.
We can go back to the Cold, let's go back to the Cold War, because I'm going to give you some background here.
Okay.
That will help maybe set the stage.
That'd be great.
You have to remember that the Cold War, we had this enemy called the Soviet Union, and they were the bad guys. They were evil. They were causing trouble in the world, and so we had to build up our defenses, nuclear defenses in particular. Okay. Now, here's another, remember this well, folks, and that is the Department of Defense is the largest corporate welfare program on the planet, okay? There's no ifs, there's no ands, there's no buts. Okay, during the Cold War, every year we were adding another 1,000 ICBMs everywhere. There was construction projects, they were building these things. Let me tell you a secret. They were building junk, okay? They were building stuff they knew they were never going to have to use. All it had to do was look pretty in the silo. So when the congressman came by and says, yep, that sure is a big ICBM, I'm impressed. And they never had to work. These were constructs. They could have been mock-ups. Who knows? But the defense contractors loved it. They were making a ton of money. They were highly profitable things. And it's just another way of fleecing the American taxpayers. You look at how the U.S. military has put itself together. If you look at the Navy, everything in the Navy is around the kit form. Well, carriers were first introduced in the 1930s. The USS Langley was a wooden-decked aircraft carrier that biplanes flew off of.
Yeah.
The model, the platform, hasn't changed since. It's gotten bigger, it's gotten more sophisticated, but it's still the same platform. Well, the Russians and the Chinese and others around the world said, you know what, that's a big sitting duck. Let's develop weapon systems that can take that thing out. And I've been saying this for a number of years, that the carrier groups are so vulnerable that if we got into it with the Russians, they would sink an entire carrier group in less than 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And you look at how U.S. weapon systems, I mean, just do some homework on the F-35, the Unified Joint Strike Fighter. These things are created from the get-go to have problems, to have systemic problems that, well, we built a, you know, that the first 150 of them for, you know, $100 billion, but we've noticed we've got these glitches and we need another $55 billion every year going forward in order to address these problems we've discovered. That's not how it works. These problems are built in, designed in from the get-go in order to create ongoing cash flow for the defense contractor, for whoever won the contract and all of their subcontractors. That's how it works. This is corporate welfare at its worst. It puts our servicemen, young men and women, in harm's way. Ask any Vietnam veteran about how much they love the M16. I mean, these things are put out there known to have defects, known to have gaps in their stated capabilities, just for the effort, well, we have to protect our young men. We have to upgrade this system. It's a cycle. It's a spiral that they get themselves into. And you look at the Russians, you know, the Soviet Union collapsed. Okay. Russia still had the job of defending themselves, their territory.
Right.
They had to develop not just cost-effective, but combat-effective weapon systems. So they've got these missile technologies that have taken the West by storm. They don't know what to do. They're scared to death of the Russian cruise missiles. They fired them from the Caspian Sea at targets in Syria. Very impressive. Speed, range, everything about it. And the Russians have not even shown us what's under the...
The
tip of the iceberg yet. The Russians are holding a lot back. The Russian aircraft can outperform anything that the U.S. makes. It's incredible that they've had to have an effective, a military contractor, a military industrial complex that is cost effective and combat effective, unlike the U.S., which has just been milking the gravy train here since the end of World War II.
Let me ask you something. And going back a bit to when you were talking about, it's just been a staged performance where they're creating the ICBMs. And they're showing the politicians, see what we've built, and they keep the whole subcontractor situation going, which I'm very familiar with because I was in the security industry for many years. How do they pass that on and snow the military personnel that are running those, overseeing them, making sure that they're running properly, they're firing properly, that they're maintained properly?
Well, the maintenance issue. First of all, you can test. They've got test hardware built in them. So if you have prime example, Volkswagen. Okay, there's this whole recent scandal with Volkswagen. How they whenever you hook up it runs as clean as can be. However, on the freeway it gets 50 and clean as stated. However, it still gets out. That is an excellent example of how they can circumvent the testing cycles in order to show people that, yep, it works. We press the button, it's going to go. That's a prime example that on the simplest way that the normal people can relate to. But that is an oversimplified example, but that's the analogy I'll use today.
So basically just even that phase of it, that stage of it is all a complete stage performance. It's just like the false flag stuff.
Yeah, it is. I mean, why should you build, who in their right mind is going to build 10, 12,000 nuclear devices or nuclear ICBMs with MIRVed, with 5 to 7 nuclear warheads on them? You know what would happen to this planet if you ever used those?
Yeah.
It's dead. We're all dead. Everything's dead. And so they knew they weren't going to be used. So every shortcut they could take, they didn't have to perform. They knew they'd never have to perform. And so there you go.
You know what's interesting that you're even bringing this up is my husband served in the Navy, but he was enlisted, and he used to sleep underneath them. I remember he was telling me the story, and he said when he got out, he was really curious, like, how is it that I was sleeping under these, and yet they were telling everybody to be careful of the radiation output, right? Mm-hmm. And the more he's dug down that rabbit hole, he's found that there was no radiation, literally.
And there you have it. So, just because they say it's a nuclear weapon, is it really a nuclear weapon? In many cases, yes. In many cases, no. I mean, were they all frauds? No.
Yeah.
Were many of the frauds? Yeah, probably. I'm guessing yes.
Amazing.
So it just gives you an insight into how the military contractors think, and that is, if they can cut corners, if they can enhance their profit line, just a little bit, they cheat. It's what they do. I mean, this, like I said, this is the largest corporate welfare program on the planet.
Wow. I'm familiar because I've called on McDonnell Douglas. I mean, all of those guys. I'm very familiar with them. Well, now do the audience a favor. I would love for you to share the whole Damascus conference that you headed up. And I know you worked alongside Gordon Duff and Jim Dean and Colonel Jim Hankey? Is that how you say it?
Colonel James Hankey. Yes, sir.
Okay. No.
I tell you what, let me just give a plug for Colonel Jim Hankey. 74 years old, 6'5" tall, 260 pounds. The guy is, I can't imagine what he was like at 25 or 30 years old, because he's fearsome as it is right now.
A force to be reckoned with.
He was Army Ranger, Joint Special Operations Command.
Oh, wow.
3,000 parachute jumps, over 300 halo jumps, including halo jumps carrying nuclear weapons. The guy is truly a force of nature and one of the nicest guys you'll ever, ever, ever meet. And I suspect that he's not really a colonel, but he's probably much higher rank than that. He's just, you know, sometimes they don't wear their proper insignia just to keep a lower profile.
Yes, I
one
bet.
One of those kind of guys.
I bet. I'm familiar with that because I'm an Air Force brat myself. So my dad was a colonel in the Air Force, and he was a fighter pilot. Well, tell everybody about this, because I feel that this literally anchored Veterans Today's intentions, successes, the infiltration of getting into some of the more behind closed doors, you know, involvement with the other cabinets, really finding out what's really going on.
It absolutely did. This was sponsored by the Minister of Justice. And the purpose there was for Syria to illustrate to the world that we are here, we are legitimate, we truly want to combat terrorism. And so they brought people from around the world, you know, and there were really, of the 300 attendees, there was probably a dozen who were truly interested in stopping terrorism. The balance there were there for the free lunch, or were there to cause dissension within the ranks, because that's something you have to worry about. They will put ringers in place in order to try to bring the thing down. But when Gordon made his speech, which was really a historic speech, identifying for the first time what the nature of the terrorism in Syria really was, It stepped. If this would be 200 years ago, it would be called pirates and brigands, because that's what they're going in and doing. They're going in and they're asset stripping Syria. They're stealing oil. We know that.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you in a minute who's buying the stolen oil, because this is an eye opener. Okay. But they're stealing artifacts from Turkey. A 600 truck caravan entered Syria, went to Aleppo, and over a period of several weeks, disassembled an entire Renault automobile plant, loaded it up on trucks, and it went back into Turkey. It has never been seen again.
Whoa!
Okay? And so it going in, and they're stealing the industrial base of Syria. They're stealing everything that's not nailed down.
Wow.
It's piracy that's occurring on dry land. And it's I'll remind people of a similar model. This has happened in history before. If you look at the Bolshevik Revolution that happened in 1917, the term then was we're preparing for communism, and we're going to collectivize everything. So they sent out, the Bolsheviks went out into the countryside, and they killed people. They killed the bourgeoisie, that is anybody who owned a business, anybody who had a trade, education. Those are the people they killed. Over the time, they killed 20 million in the first 3 years, and they killed 100 million over the duration of the Soviet Union. But whenever they collectivized the assets that these people held, they were never seen again. They went in and asset stripped Russia from the top to bottom. This is the same model that's being deployed in Syria right now. It's the asset stripping model. Instead of being under the political banner of communism, it's under the religious banner of ISIS and the Islamic State.
Mm.
But if you look at the actions are the same. They're going in, they're killing people, and they're taking their stuff. That's the long and the short of it. And that's what's going on the ground in Syria. Now, one of the points that we made at the conference was that, you know, if they're stealing oil, that oil is not getting to the refinery by itself. People aren't carrying buckets of oil to the refinery. It's being loaded on a truck, it's being loaded on a train, it's being loaded on a tanker ship someplace. And somebody's moving it. Who's ever transporting it is also contributing to the material terrorism. Okay, now the oil gets to the refinery. The refinery buys the oil for under market price. They're paying about $18 a barrel right now for stolen oil. That's what makes it attractive to them. But whenever the oil's delivered, somehow ISIS is getting paid. Someone's paying ISIS. The bank who is clearing that transaction is also contributing to the material support of terrorism. This is something that they're doing. And, you know, the buyers of the oil, and I'll tell you now who, let's talk about oil for a minute. You know, West Texas crude has its own unique chemical signature. Brent crude from the North Sea, off the coast of Scotland, has its own chemical signature. Mm. Well, the oil from Iraq and the oil from Syria also have their own unique chemical signatures. We have unrefutable proof that BP and ExxonMobil are the two large buyers of stolen oil from ISIS. Wow. Ergo, BP and ExxonMobil are providing material support to the terrorists. Okay, understand that these two very, very large, powerful oil companies are the ones who are paying the paychecks, buying the munitions, buying the guns for the ISIS fighters to use.
So they're the financial arm for ISIS, BP and Exxon.
They're the end users who are writing the checks to buy the oil. And so, you know what, shame on them. So, okay, one of the things we did, our recent trip to Syria in September, by which I left there September 21st, exactly 1 week before the Russian bombing campaign started. So I was there relatively recently, about 5-6 weeks ago. We let the Syrians know this, who's buying it, and we had legal counsel with us, U.S. legal counsel with us, that the Syrian government is retaining in order to file civil suits against BP and ExxonMobil because they are knowingly buying stolen goods from a terrorist organization. So that being said, you know, we've been gifted with this wonderful thing called the Patriot Act and the NDAA, where our government can now go out and rendition anybody who's providing material support for terrorism. So what about the top 50 executives at BP and at ExxonMobil? What about their boards of directors? Shouldn't they be picked up for questioning? I think it's time for the U.S. government to be a little more proactive.
Yes.
About their approach of stopping terrorism. And I think that would send a very, very strong message.
Well, wouldn't that be applicable to every politician out there?
I think it could, and it would. And, you know, we can talk more about that later. Mm-hmm. But these are issues. These are things that we have to look at. They gave us the tools when they gave us the Patriot Act. They never intended to have those tools used against them.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we, the people, use the tools that they gave us in order to bring justice and stop this insanity, the support of terrorism by large corporate entities within the U.S. That's something that has to be addressed. And once the civil suits are filed, if the Justice Department does not intervene and does not take part in this, the plan is to file a writ of mandamus against the Department of Justice to compel them to do their job.
You broke up there. To file a what against the Department of Justice?
A writ of mandamus. A writ of mandamus.
Danus. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that clarity. Wow. Now,
that is something that you can file against a government agency that isn't doing what it's supposed to do. It compels them to do their job.
Well, hey, audience, all you guys listening. Let's really pay attention to that statement because we are all about taking action, and this is probably a huge golden key to bringing forth a new world that we all want to create.
And then let me give you another piece of the puzzle. If you're someone out there and you've stopped at a gas station that was owned by ExxonMobil or was owned by BP, and you put gas in your tank, they have unwillingly made you a supporter of terrorism. So you have the right to file a class action suit against these two companies in order to clear your name because you were a knowing co-conspirator in this process. So there are numerous avenues that are opening up here for people who want to crush these corporate behemoths and see them broken up into a million pieces, or better yet, nationalized. This might be the one of the first cracks in their armor.
Yeah. You know, and I really do feel like so much of that which they've created is now finally biting them in the butt because we're using it against them. You know, the Patriot Act, I've always thought about that. It's like, well, when's it going to be their time to be shown, proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that they themselves are terrorists against people, you know?
Well, you bring up an excellent point, and I want to point to the chairman of the Senate Armed Forces Committee, Senator John McCain, Senator from Arizona, who entered Syria illegally and met with terrorists from ISIS.
Yes, I was going to ask you about this. Good.
Promised them munitions and material. Now realize, John McCain is the only U.S. senator who's ever been charged with treason. He was given a... the word eludes me. But they gave every prisoner that was held by the North Vietnamese amnesty.
Yes.
In order to not have him be the only one with amnesty. They gave it to all of them because he had charges of treason brought against him by the commanding officer prisoners in the Hanoi Hilton there. He was the only guy who had to face that, so they gave everybody a blanket amnesty in order not to single him out. Don't forget who this man is. He's a traitor to his country. He always has been. He always will be, just like his father before him was a traitor who covered up the USS Liberty incident. We can go into these things. There's a lot here, but there's 100 rabbit holes to go in. The bottom line is, and I want people to realize this, is that our country, the states, we have an active fifth column working out there that is not aligned with the stated goals, the stated interests of the United States. They are not interested in defending the country. They're not interested in people. They're not interested in defending the culture that we have here in the U.S. A lot of people out there know that there's something wrong. They don't quite know what that something wrong is, but the things that our government does don't make sense, and that's why, is because we have people who are actively working to bring this country down.
Yeah, no question about it. And I actually was going to ask you a little more about the politicians, because I think in another article I read of yours, there was only one politician that you felt within all of the congressmen who had signed the AIPAC. Is that what it's called?
Who did not sign the AIPAC oath of loyalty to Israel.
I really want you to talk to everybody about that. That's just mind-blowing.
Well, we have 534 senators and congressmen out there who have signed an oath of loyalty to Israel, which, the way it's worded, the way this oath of loyalty is written, it puts Israel more important to them than their oath of office to the United States and its Constitution. So here's what AIPAC does. And they've done this several times. Senator Fulbright, he was one of the first guys to come out and speak against Israel. And so what they did to him is they found someone to run against him, and no matter how much money he raised, AIPAC would give his opponent more. Much more. I think this is a sad truth about U.S. politics, and you can look it up. It's easily to document. 96% of the time, the candidate with the most money wins. Think about that. Let that one sink in. 96% of the time, the candidate with the most money wins. And also remember about AIPAC, JFK, before he was murdered in broad daylight in Daley Plaza, he had signed an executive order that ordered the American Israeli Foreign Affairs Committee to register as a foreign agent of Israel. He was killed. 3 weeks after that, Lyndon Johnson reversed the order and the executive order, and therefore AIPAC can operate with impunity now, even though they are funded and as operating as a foreign intelligence operation within the United States.
Whoa. They're operating as a foreign intelligence operation?
They always have been. That's why JFK signed the executive order in 1960.
Uh-oh. You're stuck.
Oh. Politics.
Oh, there
if
we go.
APAC couldn't spin.
We're having serious technical difficulties here.
Agents. Think about it.
Okay, Mike, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Okay, now I can hear you.
I got the little screen thing that came across an internet problem, so.
Okay, I'm gonna turn my camera off.
Okay.
And that's going to take up less
bandwidth.
Okay, so you cut off right where you started talking about Kennedy.
Okay, well, you have to realize, and you missed all of that then.
Yes.
Okay, well, JFK, before he was murdered, signed an executive order that compelled what we now call APAC to register as a foreign agency so that their activities would be tracked. It's okay, they can operate, but they have to register as a foreign agency. Kennedy was murdered. And then 3 weeks later, Lyndon Johnson rescinded that executive order that allowed APAC to operate with impunity without being registered as a foreign agency. You have to realize that APAC is funded by Israel, always has been, always will be, and is essentially a foreign intelligence operation that's been sent in to undermine and corrupt our Congress. That's what APAC is, that's what they are, that's what they do.
That's amazing. The fact that that has come out, because so many people are always scratching their heads trying to figure out why the politicians have absolutely no allegiance to this country or to the people. And, you know, part of it, you can go down the one rabbit hole of basically they're all lawyers, right? They've all taken the BAR.
Okay? Well, most of them are, yes.
You know, mostly all of them. And if they aren't, they still have in some way, shape, or form taken some sort of allegiance down that legal path. But just the fact that has been uncovered really sheds a light as to who these people are that are so-called representing us.
Well, they're not representing. You have to remember that a politician's first goal is to get reelected.
Yes.
That is their number one fundamental goal, be reelected. And APAC issues threats, and they have carrots and sticks.
Mm.
And you know, the carrot is, say, well, if you vote this way and vote that way, we'll make sure you have plenty of money for your next election. Like I said earlier, 96% of the time, the candidate with the most money wins. And the stick is that if you don't do what we tell you to do, we're going to fund your opponent next time, and you're not going to have a prayer. Look what they did to Cynthia McKinney. They redistricted her right out of existence.
Yes.
Phil Fulbright, Senator William Fulbright. They overfunded his opponent. Dennis Kucinich, another one, redistrict out of existence. I mean, these are politicians who had the backbone, the spine, the testicular fortitude to stand up against APAC.
Yes.
They get shunted aside. They get put out of a job. And no politician wants to be put out of his job. They want to get reelected time and again.
So that really does show that they've truly sold their soul to the devil, so to speak. Now let's get back to ISIS itself. The first question I want to ask you is, how do the people in the various surrounding countries, whether it's Syria, Iraq, Iran, I mean, et cetera, Jordan, how are they perceiving ISIS? Is it obvious to them that this is a, you know, an American, United States funded, covertly run operation?
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
And it's not just the U.S. Like I said, it's Israel, it's Turkey, it's Saudi Arabia. Those are your four main players that have created ISIS. And they are viewed as savages. That's how they view ISIS. Having met with the Grand Mufti, having discussed ISIS with him in depth, he says, Mike, these people of ISIS, they're not Islam. This is not what we are. These are the heretics.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who should be punished most severely under Islamic law for their heresies. And they're not what they say they are. They're not what they're supposed to be. And ISIS springs from Saudi Arabia because Saudi Arabia has been funding the Wahhabi Islamic extremism for 40 or 50 years now, trying to spread it around the world to create this Islamic enemy. That is not the true nature of Islam. Like I said, the Grand Mufti is a sincere, kind-hearted, loving man. And, you know, it like I said, it radiates from him. This is a guy who, I mean, he just has that Gandhi-esque gentleness to him. You know, nice. It's a beautiful thing to see and encounter someone who you could just tell he's not enlightened. He's so enlightened. It's that type of you know you're in the presence of an enlightened soul when you're with this guy.
Fantastic.
And for him to talk about ISIS this way and say that, you know, these are savages. These people are if anything demonic.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're capturing women and selling them as slaves, they're beheading men, they're doing all these acts of barbarism and savagery. This is the people of Syria, the people of Iraq are scared to death of ISIS because they don't want it to happen to them. Mm-hmm. They don't want it to happen to their wife, their daughter, their sons.
Right.
They just don't want it. They want to do is live their lives in peace and be left alone.
You know, now that leads me to the next question, which is, you had mentioned in one of your writings about the Russian Federal Army has literally checkmated ISIS. And I was wondering if you could, just talk a little bit about that.
Well, see, the U.S. has been going in there for a long time in violation of Syrian sovereign airspace. They've been going in there and conducting bombing missions. But they haven't been bombing anything. They've been bombing empty countryside. They haven't been bombing any targets. Russia went in there and starts bombing the real ISIS targets. And Russia has shared the battle maps with VT. We know where they're at. We know where ISIS is. We know where they're hitting it. When I was in the Minister of Justice's office, he shared their battle maps as to where ISIS was. They have a list of the top 500 commanders within ISIS. They know who these people are, and these people are now being hunted. Mm-hmm. And the Russians came in. The Russians have a very effective bombing campaign. They know where the bunkers are. They allowed them to congregate there, so they felt that they were safe. And they're bombing the snot out of them right now.
Wow.
And it's about time.
Yeah, it's a long time overdue, isn't it? And, you know, we've even talked about it. My husband and I have talked about this many times, where one of our key allies over there is Saudi Arabia. Look what they do to their women.
Yeah, well, look what Saudi Arabia is doing in Yemen right now. And if we could go back to the situation on the ground in Syria, the Syrian army has been fighting valiantly and brilliantly. However, now they have reinforcements. They've got Hezbollah militias coming up to support them in their attempt to eradicate ISIS, and they've got the Iranian Quds force coming in to help them eradicate ISIS. Wow. In addition to which, they've got Russian Spetsnaz on the ground there as well. And it's, I wouldn't want to be a member of ISIS right now. I would, 35% of them have been killed, another 30% are on the run.
Wow.
And they're going to be running into Turkey. So now you're going to have all these disaffected, savage terrorists loose in Turkey. How do you think the Erdogan government's going to deal with that when it happens?
No kidding. And now how are they able to distinguish and decipher who is truly part of the ISIS faction? I mean, I would imagine some of them are not wearing any kind of uniforms to depict who they're allied with.
Well, they're not. The Syrian Minister of Justice, like I said, has a list of 500 top ISIS commanders, names, photographs, dossiers on them, so that they're going to be looked for. The average ISIS soldier, you have to remember something. These people who are fighting for ISIS, they had nothing. There's so little economic opportunity because, the wealthy in this world are hoarding so much, and we don't really have a global economy per se. That there's people who have just desperate people who'll do anything. for any kind of a job or living. And they're not loyal ideologically to what ISIS is. It's just that they get paid. Mm-hmm. And it's something for them to do. And it really is a difficult and meddlesome problem, the way that our global economic system has concentrated more and more wealth into fewer and fewer hands as a function of time.
Yeah, yeah. And going into the poverty-stricken areas and, you know, basically taunting them with more income than, say, the regular armies of that actual country, right?
Well, more income and the fact that, well, look, you can have all the women you can capture.
Mm, oh, my God.
You know, there you go.
Sick.
It's so sick. It's an ancient model where you go in, you plunder, you rape, you kill, and that is what they're using to take these very uneducated, illiterate young men and turning them into murderers.
Sounds and just so like Old Testament stuff here, Mike. God.
Yeah, well, it's a known template that's worked against humanity here for thousands of years, and it's time that we broke the mold and changed the paradigm about how humanity treats each other.
Well, it sounds like the tide is turning in favor of the people over there. Now, that would be my next question is, do you feel that this is a fairly swift action considering the superiority of Russians? Missiles and technology and, you know, their planes, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, do you feel that this is something that could be quickly snuffed out?
Well, if you listen to John McCain yesterday, he said that we need to do to Russia and Syria what we did to them in Afghanistan. And that is flood them with, Stinger missiles and other anti-aircraft type weapons and things in order to make this a very expensive venture for the Russians to do. Again, McCain, as head of the Armed Services Committee, is in a position to do a great deal of damage to our country, cause us a great deal of prestige, and get the United States involved in another war that we don't want.
Wow.
Don't forget that the U.S. spent $7 trillion fighting in Afghanistan and in Iraq. For what? We got nothing from it. There's no upside. There's no benefit to the American people.
Very true.
That's money that could have been kept in our own pockets. We could have spent it domestically on our own infrastructure. Just doing any number of things that would have benefited the people of the United States instead of these few profit-hungry military contractors. You know, I mean, the Halliburtons, the Northrop Grumman's, you know, the Boeing's, the McDonnell Douglas. Anyway, you get the point here.
Yeah,
there's a few military providers out there, you know, who provide munitions and systems of war to the military that they're making money hand over fist. They love this. They need a war to make their quarterly profits. The rest of us don't need this. We don't want this. And it's up to us to force them out of that business.
Now, you know, you brought up a good point that the war in Iraq, I know several men and women who came back from that. In fact, several of them have passed away. And to me, it was just another experiment of biowarfare on our own people. I want to share a story. You just got to hear this. I dated a guy who said that he was on the front lines. And when they were given the go-ahead to actually march into the front lines of Iraq, what they found was all these men huddled up behind these sand dunes. And they were actually in suits and ties. Many of them were wearing regular street clothes. When they interrogated them, they found that they had been yanked out of their stores and places of business and forced to go fight on the front lines. When they arrived there, they were waving white whatever they could find, t-shirts, you know, flags, and saying, please, please, we don't even want to be doing this war. We don't even have any kind of training to be a soldier. And as the story went further, they asked them, they were shooting a specific missile every single day into the Americans' camp at a specific time every morning. And they thought, oh, these guys are stupid. Why are they doing this? This is really stupid. We'll blow it out of the sky before it even arrives here. So it was very predictable. And they then realized later that every time they blew them out of the air, that they were transporting, basically through the air, biowarfare germs. And that was, I feel, one of the tests that Iraq was used for. And you mentioned in one of your articles about there's some new intel that about 3,000 ground troops are being ordered to go to Syria.
To act as human shields to protect ISIS.
Yeah.
Because you don't want your special operations out there. And, let me just share a couple of things. Number one, the special operations community, since the murder of SEAL Team 6, after their bogus raid on to kill bin Laden, mm-hmm. understand that never happened. That was stagecraft. It was scripted. Bin Laden's been dead since December of 2001.
I've heard that too. Yeah.
That was merely a ruse. And then the SEAL Team 6, which was used as the blunt instrument to go get bin Laden, they were all killed. The special operations community noticed that. They are not as trusting of their chain of command as
Absolutely.
They have been in the past.
Yeah.
Number two, and this is really, really, really critical. If you're a member of the military in this day and age, and you go over and you serve, and you're trained, and you know how to fight, and you know how to do the things that the military requires you to do, once you're out of the military, they have no use for you. They don't want you around because you are a danger to the system that created you. So you will find 28 suicides a day. You'll find people dying of exposure to depleted uranium. You'll find all of these things have been said, Gulf War Syndrome. All of these things have been created so that you don't have a large core of combat veterans out there who are going to live to be 45 years old. They want them dead sooner than that. They do not want these people living long and productive lives. Because as the police state, tightens its grip on the United States, these are the most likely people who could offer some credible resistance. The last people that the powers that be, that our Khazari and mafia overlords want, is for these people to be able to offer them any resistance at all. So anybody who joins the military these days, don't do it. You're nuts. They have no use for you except as cannon fodder. And once they're done, once you've done your time of service, they want you to die and die quickly. So they will ensure that that happens to you because you can't refuse injections if you're going into theater. They'll inject you with anything. They'll inject you with everything. They'll inject you with things that will destroy your system 10 years from now. Don't trust them.
Yeah,
Don't be part of it. Don't play the game. Say, no, I'm not going to go.
Mike, they're even injecting them with nanotechnology where they can literally stop their brain function in the blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
This is not space age stuff we're talking about. This is really going on.
I know it. I get it. I see it. I understand completely what's going on. But, the people who are in our military and anyone who is considering joining our military understand that they don't want you to survive once you're out of the service. They want you gone. They don't want you to retire and go live the rest of your life. They don't want you to. They want you as dead as quickly as possible.
Yeah, it's just so unfortunate. And being in an
it's not unfortunate. It's downright sinister.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
It's sinister.
It's beyond disgusting. Now, and that brings up another point. Can you just alert everybody as to the way in which the Air Force, you talked about the 10th Air Wing, that just did a series of bombing in Syria? And
yes.
Please talk to everybody about that, because I want everyone to be really aware of what's truly going on.
Let's talk about that, because there have been two sorties flown, two F-16s each. One of them targeted a water purification plant that supported the city of Aleppo, which is really the largest city in Syria. Without that water purification plant, people are going to have to drink untreated water out of the Euphrates River. If they drink untreated water out of Euphrates, Euphrates is known for having cholera. Okay? So you drink the cholera, you've got this migration of refugees fleeing Syria because of the war. They've drank the water out of the Euphrates. They can make it 3 to 5 days before the symptoms of cholera will take over. And then they have cholera. And then other people in that area get exposed to it. And so it was really a bioweapons attack using existing things by taking away the...
So you're basically saying it wasn't what we would think is the conventional warfare. It was just a bioweaponry attack. Man, are they messing with us?
Well, that's just it. We're talking about issues here that are very
controversial.
Cut out at. I was talking about the second Sword 2 F-16s out of U.S. F-16s out of Turkey went and struck the civilian power plant.
Yes.
And put 2.5 million people in Aleppo in darkness. They're still in darkness. These are civilian targets that...
We are really running into technical difficulties, Mike.
And well, here's what's significant about these things. For the first time now, you know, F-16s don't take off without orders from a chain of command. There's a general someplace who signed off on those two missions.
Huh.
And that general needs to be held accountable for striking civilian infrastructure targets in a foreign country. He committed an act of war against Syria. And this brings up another problem, it's something that people need to be aware of. It is not confirmed that either Obama or the Joint Chiefs of Staff are in command of the commanders on the ground that are supporting the Syria and Iraq efforts right now.
Okay.
It is highly likely that we have commanders that are reporting to an alternate chain of command right now that are not following their constitutional mandates and have broken ranks, essentially. And so who are trying to get us into this other situation. Now, remember that it was Dick Cheney, when he was vice president, illegally and unconstitutionally took command of the Joint Special Operations Command. And so we're still trying to ferret out who are the good guys, who are the bad guys.
I bet. And that gets tough, too, when you consider artificial intelligence and stuff that's going on.
Let me give you some background on something, okay?
Sure.
George H.W. Bush, you know, we know he was at Daley Plaza on the day that JFK was killed as a CIA operative. We know he was there. He was part of it. We know that he was director of Central Intelligence for 11 years. We know that he was Ronald Reagan's vice president for 8 years. Served on his own for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
We know immediately afterwards that Bill Clinton, who was also a CIA asset, reported to George H.W. Bush for 8 years. Then we had George W. Bush in there for 8 years. So we have over 50 years of George H.W. Bush influence in the U.S. government, which he could pack our bureaucracies in every agency with people who are more loyal to him than they are to the Constitution and the American people. And that is one of the large causes of why we have such a dysfunctional government. I used to call it mismanagement. But mismanagement implies incompetence. What I call what happened to the U.S. is malmanagement, which implies evil intent.
Yes.
And so we have had a government managing this country by evil intent for a very, very long time. And we, the United States, have become exactly what we accuse Nazi Germany of and exactly what we accuse the Soviet Union of. We are the aggressor. We are the bad guys. We're on the wrong side of history. And I personally don't want to be on the wrong side of history.
No.
I want this to be the America that I was raised to believe it is. And not this strange place that I find myself living in now. This is not the America that I was brought up in.
No, not at all. And in fact, I was going to ask you, when you start talking about America throughout your...
You're breaking up.
Oh, shoot. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Mike?
Okay, can you repeat that? I can hear you now.
What I was going to ask you is, there are articles that you write where you use the United States, and there are articles that you write where you use America. And I would imagine, at least from some of the intel that I have received and read, that there are clearly two different pathways now with the United States government. And it's kind of what you've alluded to, where there is there are factions that really do believe in the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. They do want to be here to protect and serve the people. And then you have the other ones that have been in power for a very long time. Do you feel that separation between those two factions is becoming much more clear, more distinct?
Absolutely. It is becoming more and more obvious every day that the bad guys are in charge, have been for a while. I was introduced about 2 weeks ago, maybe three, to a young Marine Corps captain. He's with MARSOC, which is their special forces, the Marine Corps. He's due to be promoted to major, and you have to understand that he's going from being a company grade officer to being a field grade officer. And I have never heard... Let me rephrase that. I've not heard that much dissatisfaction out of active duty military in the officer corps since Vietnam.
Wow.
Okay, since Vietnam.
Wow.
And so that's where things are at. That's where things are going. The young up-and-comers are the ones who are still clean, still untainted, haven't been bribed or human compromised or whatever else yet. That is our hope for the future, because you have to understand that no active duty military is compelled to obey an illegal command or an illegal order. Mm-hmm. So they're starting to figure this out. They're starting to get it. I do believe that there's a lot of guys in there, and as Gordon and I have talked about this, that the entire Pentagon, the CIA, the entire Department of Defense needs to be bulldozed and reconstructed from the ground up. And this includes the service academies.
Yes.
Because the service academies have been corrupted. They have been sidetracked. What they're teaching is not relative. The U.S. does no longer... They don't want generals of the caliber of a George Patton anymore. Mm-hmm. They don't want generals of the caliber of a
MacArthur
anymore.
Yeah.
MacArthur. They want guys who are going to follow orders, right or wrong, no matter what it does, no matter where it takes them. They don't want guys who are actually capable enough to go out and win a war and win it clean and do it fast. They don't want that type of individual in there anymore. They want the kind who are going to do what they're told, no matter what.
So they're
screening for a different type of individual than what made this country great. They want the yes man. That's what they want. They don't want the free thinker. They don't want the guy who's going to do the right thing because it's the right thing. They want the guy who's going to do what he's told.
You know, Mike, I got to ask you this because I've asked several other people that I've interviewed, and this is a question that never gets answered, or it's a question that is so hot and so secretive that it could be a problem to get the answer correctly.
I'll do my best.
Okay. And that would be, isn't there already a behind the scenes, under the radar, faction of men and women who are already, I'm going to use the word fighting, for this cause that you're discussing with me today?
Well, that's what Veterans Today is about.
Yeah.
That's who we are. It's what we do. We don't get paid for this. This is all free. We don't take advertisers because we don't want to be influenced by the threat of withdrawing the advertising money once we've built up an overhead. So we don't take a dime. We do this for free. It's all volunteer work because this is work that has to be done. And yes, there are people out there who are working actively to bring this type of positive, proactive change about.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm one of them too. I run this blog. It costs me an immense amount of money. It's all volunteer. So, I mean, I'm just saying there has to be, when I talk to the number of people I've spoken to that are prior military, they have their eyes very open. It is very difficult with the internet age for especially the young men and women that are going into the services to not be aware of the level of corruption and the lie, the farce that they are, you know, have been presented when they were, you know, enlisting or went through the office academy, you know, officers academy, that sort of thing. So I just keep wondering, there has to be some sort of army or some sort of sets of battalions that are actually fighting for this worthy cause by this time.
Well, I wouldn't say that it breaks down to battalions. I'm sure that there are enough people out there to make up many battalions who are on the side. But you don't know if you're an officer and you're in a chain of command with other officers, you don't know if the guy next to you is on your side or if he's with the bad guys.
That's
How do you
true.
Know? And so you've kind of got to keep a very, very low profile. What you think in your mind is probably the last sanctuary that any of us have, this age of surveillance. Everything we write, everything we type, everything we email, text, talk on the phone, all of it is constantly monitored by the NSA. So in particularly if you're in the military and if you have clearances and you're working on sensitive secure type projects, you have to really, really, really keep your nose clean and not make any waves. Otherwise, who knows where you'll end up. You'll end up being Pat Tillman.
Yeah. Good point. Well, let's share a little bit of good news, and that is you just released some really cool intel about the success of bringing down some of the key aides and leader of ISIS. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, can you go over that a little bit? Because it sounds like there's been quite a few success stories around that.
Well, that's just a tip of the iceberg. Whenever I was there in September meeting with the Minister of Justice, he shared the dossiers. He opened up his files and showed that this is who we're going after. And so that process has started. The Syrians now have reinforcements. They know who the bad guys are. Their intel on the ground over there is outstanding.
Wow.
And so they know. And there's more to come. I think one of the most significant things that's happened in the past 2 weeks was the capture of that Israeli brigadier general in Iraq who was leading ISIS. I'm sure that he's being interrogated thoroughly, and I think we're going to get a lot of good intel out of that.
You're referring to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi?
I'd have to look up the name. It eludes me, but when we published it on VT, we had his serial number, everything that goes with it. You know, he has made, we've clearly got Israeli fingerprints all over this. There's no dodging that bullet now.
So now that you have that information and now that you have the proof, where to next? Is there truly any meat in the International Court of Law?
Well, we're going to find out, aren't we? That's an interesting thing because, you know, the world is becoming more and more bifurcated, and this is something that the bad guys have wanted. I mean, they missed the old Cold War. That was a gravy train for these guys.
Mm-hmm.
They loved it because you never had to go fight. And yet you could clip coupons and just deliver more nukes every year. And so they miss that. They're losing control of the world financial system. And what they need right now is a masking event. A masking event is something that will cover up all of your misdeeds in a manner that allows you to say, well, this all occurred because of the war. We don't have those banking records anymore. They were destroyed in the war. You know, this is the last attempt of scoundrels to stay out of prison, and or from being executed, because that's the level of crime they've committed against humanity. Is that these are not imprisonable crimes; these are executable crimes. These are crimes where they should be hung by the neck until dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, there's so much blood and like you were referring to before, this is beyond shooting somebody in the temple. I mean, we're talking really horrific, barbaric, beyond our comprehension kind of stuff that's going on over there.
Oh, it is, and it's sad, but it's the reality we have to deal with. And it's not just the guy who's taking the knife and cutting the head off. It's not just him, but it's the guy who's ordering him to do it, and it's the guy who's paying for him to do it. It's all of this. It's all of these things. And you know, the whole issue is who's providing the material support for terrorism. Because if you cut off the material support, ISIS is going to go away in less than 2 weeks.
So okay. BP and Exxon are on the hot seat. Now, how can we, the audience listening to you, assist? Is it applicable for us to
stop? Yes, absolutely. Stop buying their products. Number one, you know, don't buy it from BP. Don't buy it from ExxonMobil. Just don't do it. Number two, there has to be a class action lawsuit brought against them, because anybody who's ever bought a gallon of Exxon gasoline now has standing to file or to join a class action suit against ExxonMobil or BP. And let's break them that way. Let's force our government to have to take criminal action against these companies.
And I'd like to put a little request out to the audience as well. Anyone who has the time, if I had the time, I'd be doing it. But if anyone has the time to research all the corporations that are being run by BP and Exxon, please submit that to me if you can come up with a list.
Go up the food chain the other direction as well.
Yes.
Find out who the largest stockholders in Exxon BP are, and follow it up that way, because that works both ways. Who they own, who owns them, who's on their board, who on the board. Who is each board member representing? What interest are these board members representing? Are they representing Blackstone? Are they representing Carlyle Group? Who are they representing? Find out who owns the shares, who owns the blocks of shares that dictate who the board members are going to be.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Now, Mike, to go back a little bit, you really emphasize in one of the articles about the FSA only really being in the South. That their supposed maps are showing that they're not really infiltrating certain locations. Can you talk about the significance of that?
Are you talking about ISIS being only in the South?
Yes.
Well, you have to understand, ISIS is, well, there's two main points of ingress and egress. One of them is in the South, you know, over the, what's the sea there, that it's on the border of Israel and Syria, Jordan there. That's one ingress egress point. And the other one is through Turkey.
Right.
And Turkey is a leaky sieve right now. I would say probably 70 or 80% of the men and munition that are coming in are coming in through Turkey. And one of the things I want to go back to, we talked earlier about that there's a shipping company that's moving the oil. There's a bank that's clearing the transaction. There's a refinery that's processing the oil. There's an antiquities dealer in London who is selling these artifacts that have been stolen from Iraq and from Syria. Just understand how big the scale of this criminal conspiracy that allows this to happen is. This is an enormous criminal conspiracy. This is really what I call the Khazarian Mafia.
Mm-hmm.
It's a transnational, transgenerational organizational criminal conspiracy that's been doing this for a very, very long time. Decades is not nearly enough. Centuries may be a better commentary on this. But this has been going on for a very long time. And these are very deep relationships. I mean, if I go to the bank and try to take out $2,000, they want to report me to the Fed. Not that I have $2,000 to take out, but that's the limit.
Mm-hmm.
But how are these guys clearing these transactions for tens and hundreds of millions of dollars if they're not being helped from the inside? That's the thing people have to get their mind around, is how big, how pervasive, how ubiquitous this criminal conspiracy is that's making this whole war profitable.
You know, you brought up a really good point about the Khazarian mafia, and I know you talk about that a great deal, and the fact that this actual kind of desire to take down Syria and to take down Russia goes all the way back to 1020 AD. Can you just summarize a little bit of what is the history behind this absolute desire, almost consumable desire, to bring this portion of the world down?
Well, Khazaria used to exist. It was an empire that existed between the Caspian and Black Seas. It overlapped both of them a little bit on both sides. And essentially, if you ever watched the movie Road Warrior, that was their behavior. To anyone who came into their land, they would kill them, rape them, steal, whatever. The Persians, now we call them Iranians, and the Russians, out of Kiev, by the way, that used to be the capital of Russia, had enough of this, and they collaborated together. And in about 780 AD, they went to the king of Khazaria, and there's two kings of Khazaria. One was called the invisible king was called the Khagan. The visible king was called the Beg. And they put the word to him and says, "Look, you guys." Prior to 780, they were Baal worshippers, which, human sacrifice, sacrificing children, blood rituals, all that type of stuff. They were told, point blank, said, look, if you don't adopt a Western religion, something with a moral grounding in it, it's all out war. We're going to destroy your empire. Okay. So he looked. The Khazarian kings looked at Judaism. They looked at Christianity. They looked at Islam. They rejected Christianity and Islam. They adopted Judaism as their mantle of religion that they put on over their underlying religion, which was to this day Baal worship. And things went okay, a little better for a while, but in the around 1020. Persia and Russia decided enough. They haven't changed their ways. We have to destroy these people. And what do you do with a rabid dog? You kill a rabid dog. So they made the decision to kill the rabid dog. After that, you had the remaining Khazarians who fled, got out of there. They infiltrated Poland, all of Eastern Europe, through Ukraine. What is Ukraine these days? And they sort of hid out. Hung low, they put themselves in ghettos to isolate themselves and for protection. And the rest is history. But they've not forgotten this blood feud. There is this, this is a 1,000-year-old blood feud that's been going on because they didn't appreciate getting their empire destroyed, right? They didn't appreciate getting their people scattered to the four winds. And they've been trying to destroy Russia and Persia, what we call Iran, today ever since then. And that's where this animosity comes from. That's where it's from. It's an irrational 1,000-year-old blood feud that they really brought on themselves because of their lawlessness and their lack of respect for other human beings.
That is really interesting. And history repeats itself. That would definitely be a cycle that needs to be
That cycle needs to be broken.
Yeah, broken and neutralized,
Well, the thing is, you look at what happened to Russia in the Bolshevik Revolution. You realize you have Putin coming out and saying that 87% of the Bolsheviks were Khazarian Jews. Mm. And, you look at this, and you look at the murder of 100 million Russian civilians and all of their assets and resources stolen.
Yes.
It's pretty amazing. And you wonder why we have rich Jews. Okay. You know, if you kill 100 million people and take all their stuff, people get wealthy from doing that. That seems to be what it is. You look at, was it 1954, the overthrow of the elected prime minister of Iran, installed the Shah, who was one of the most brutal regimes ever. And then people are angry because the Iranian people had enough of being having a dictator put in power by a foreign intelligence agency. Come on, I don't blame the Iranians. I side with the Iranians. Mm-hmm. That's what all people want. Everyone wants to be a free and sovereign people.
Absolutely.
To be able to chart their own destiny, to choose who's going to lead them, to choose how they're going to be led. That is a fundamental human right. This is not something that can be opposed upon people by the outside.
Well, the other thing you pointed out, which I think is really important for everybody to be aware of, is the Bashar al-Assad regime. I had no idea. 86% of those that voted in Syria voted for him.
And guess what the voter turnout was?
What?
93% of the people who could vote voted. 86% of them voted for him.
Wow.
Yeah, and let me tell you about Bashar al-Assad. I mean, there's two leaders in the world today who I respect above all others. One of them is Vladimir Putin.
Yes.
And the other is Bashar al-Assad. And I respect them for the same reasons. Here are men who are defending their country. They're defending their people. They're defending their culture. They can't be bought. They can't be browbeat. They can't be intimidated. They can't be sold out. You know, those two men are two examples. I wish we had leadership like that in the U.S. and not this bunch of prostitutes that pose as politicians for us in the USA here. But let me tell you a little bit of history about Bashar al-Assad. He never set out to be president of Syria. He went to medical school. He was an ophthalmologist practicing in London. His father was getting up in years, was going to retire, and then suddenly mysteriously died. There is speculation that he was murdered. Speculation. Haven't said he was. So his brother was in a position to take over. Well, his brother was assassinated. That we can document. So Bashar al-Assad was a guy who never wanted to be president, and to portray him as a dictator is just absolutely ludicrous. This is a man, like I said, cares about his country, cares about his people, cares about his culture, and he's doing everything he can do to protect them. And the same can be said of Vladimir Putin. I think that is the leadership model that is lacking in the USA, where we have who's for sale.
Yes.
Remember, 96% of the time, the candidate with the most money wins. Who's for sale? What do I have to do to raise campaign money? Whose butt do I have to kiss to get a donation? What promise do I have to make to get a donation? What do I have to do to not have well-funded opposition? We've got the wrong class of politicians. We've got the wrong class of people serving in this country. And until we rectify these things, we're going to get more of the same.
That's so well put, Mike. It's so very true. And unfortunately, it's been going on for such a long time. I don't think any average American, and I'm going to say United States of America citizen, actually, how many of us even really think that that's possible because we've been so snowed for so long? You know, there's so much corruption in the United States. It's just, I know it's everywhere, but in particular, they are focusing on Syria, Iran, Iraq. Isn't this because they're one of the last remains of countries that are using actual gold coins? They were not, jumping into the world banking system.
Look at who is independent of the world banking system. And one thing I'm glad to see is that there's going to be an alternate to the SWIFT system, which is Rothschild-controlled,
yes,
and that's his BRIC system. I really hope that it is as it's presented, and I hope it's just not a Trojan horse. I have
Me
to be
too.
Skeptical.
Yeah.
until it's up and proven and functioning as we hope it does, I'm going to be skeptical. But you look at the five countries who were left. I mean, Libya was one, Syria was another, North Korea is another. Cuba just got brought into the fold here for the Obama regime. Iran's being brought into the fold by the Obama regime. And by the way, this Iranian nuclear deal, anybody who has any doubts about this, don't, because this is a great deal for the USA. This is a good deal for us.
Good.
It's a bad deal for the oil companies. They don't like it because it's going to, once that Iranian oil is available on the open market, people in the United States are going to be able to buy gasoline for $1.29 a gallon.
Oh, my God, that would be fantastic.
And think about that. Now, just remember, year and a half ago, we were paying $4.19 a gallon.
Yes, yes.
What do you think the oil companies like more? Do you think they like the $1.29 a gallon, or do you think they like the $4.19 a gallon?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know. It's a sad but true thing. And there's one other aspect I want to point out here. Under George H.W. Bush, Bush 41, the U.S. began the process of outsourcing key strategic military and intelligence functions to private contractors. Okay?
Okay.
That trend has continued along, and primarily the U.S. government was the main consumer of those services. Not anymore. Now, any corporation can go out and contract with a Blackwater or a Kroll or a Dynatech or any of these out there who are for hire military and intelligence operations that are anything as good or better than what the U.S. government currently has. Mm. So it's changed the world. There are mercenary forces out there that are for hire to the highest bidder. Any corporation. So if you're, let's ExxonMobil, since they're the bad guys today, if you don't like the price of oil, let's go to an oil-producing region and let's blow up a pipeline and say it's terrorism.
Yeah.
Let's go create some havoc out there that's going to cause the price of oil to spike so we can regain our profitability. Think about it. You know, it's just food for thought. It's what's going on in the world today, folks. It's how it is, but there's a whole nother military and industrial complex out there that's working besides the one that is paid by the U.S. government. There's a whole nother one in parallel that's paid by private corporations out there that they're trying to direct human and world events.
The bottom line is we must stop looking at those that are supposedly representing us with naivete. We must start educating ourselves and empowering ourselves with knowledge. And that means reading anything to do with them. I mean, you wouldn't go in and have your surgery on your brain without checking out the surgeon. So why are we doing the same thing with the people that are overseeing our water, our food, our men and women that are being shipped off to these ridiculous wars that do nothing for us, our economy, etc.? I mean, it blows my mind. Mike, tell me something. I read a long time ago that one of the aces in the hole was getting the Mideast countries to not be so fractionalized and operating more as a joint force, and that a line in the sand was finally drawn, which caused them to start aligning together, working more with their own cultural background versus the West and all the corruption, et cetera. Do you agree with that? And if so, do you know when that line in the sand was actually drawn? Like, what was the ultimate thing that the ISIS and Al-Qaeda and all these things that have been done, what was the ultimate thing that really turned the tides?
Boy, I can't point to any one thing, but I have had it suggested to me as a bit of a prediction that there is going to be an Assyrian power rising up there that's going to unite the Arab peoples, in their own best interest. I don't know when, I don't know where. It may be, 10, 15, 20 years off, but you're starting to see the trends of it, because tribes that used to be adversarial to each other, even though they were Arabic peoples, are now starting to realize we've got a bigger enemy than each other. We've got this other, you know, Khazarian force out there, and those are controlled by it, that we have to deal with. Good. And so there's going to be hopefully some alignment. You look at what Russia is doing and trying to get a Central Asian compact going, to where there is a Central Asian power that's cooperative with itself. China is opening up a new Silk Road in order to not be boxed in by U.S. naval power, both land and sea. And there's a number of developments that are happening to where other peoples of the world are realizing what a threat that this Khazarian-controlled U.S. has become. To them, and like I said, we're on the wrong side of history right now. We're not the United States. We were raised to believe we were. We have been hijacked. We've been subverted. This has been going on for a very long time, and it all goes back to the wellspring of one event, and that was the creation of the Federal Reserve. Mm-hmm. And you know, why do we, as Americans, when our Constitution says that only Congress shall have the power to print and coin money, why did we outsource that to a bunch of European private bankers and to have to pay interest to them to use currency that's in circulation today?
Exactly.
This is madness, and it gives them power over us that we have to undo. We have to cause the end of this here. It's time.
Absolutely. And to pay a foreign entity for, you know, usage of income, I'm sorry, Federal Reserve notes within our own country is just ridiculous, you know?
It's stupid.
It's stupid. No corporation would even consider running under that model, period, let alone an entire country. Now, a couple other things that are popping in my head. Number one, what is the lowdown, as far as you've heard recently, regarding the Ukrainian situation?
Well, understand that Ukraine and Syria are tied together, and also understand that Boko Haram in Africa is funded by the same people who provide material support to ISIS. All of these things are happening as a coordinated effort by what I call the bad guys. All right? Ukraine was twofold. First of all, you have to understand this guy Poroshenko, Porky as they call him, Yulia Tymoshenko, Yatsenyuk, the prime minister. Remember, these are the grandsons and granddaughters of the same Bolsheviks who murdered 15 million Ukrainians by starvation 100 years ago. Nothing has changed. People, remember your history.
Yes.
Look at who these people are. Look at who their grandparents were. Look at who their great-grandparents were. These are the Bolsheviks. These are their sons and daughters. They're still hanging on to that blood feud. Okay, don't forget it. And you know, it's time to start killing the rabid dogs.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And you also brought up China. How does China fit into the Syrian equation?
China is, how do I say this, sticking their toes in at the edge of the pool. They're not sure if they want to jump in yet or not. But you have to realize what China is in the global scheme. The U.S. is very threatened by China's ascendancy. China is without a doubt the largest economy in the world. The U.S. economy has been, stripped and shipped overseas.
Yes, totally.
I love our government. It tells us we have 5.2% unemployment, but yet we have 7.9 million people who are unemployed, and we have 96 million who are of working age, not in the workforce.
Yes.
Now, I don't care what kind of word games you want to play with this, but if you use the same metrics that were used in January of 1981 when Ronald Reagan was inaugurated into the presidency, we would have 43% unemployment in this country. But the mainstream media can't tell us that, because people would be in a panic, our stock market would tank, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
It doesn't mean it's not real, doesn't mean it's not happening. It's just that they're doing nothing but perception management now.
Wow.
Because we do not have an economy in this country anymore. It has been broken. This was broken by the globalists through efforts like NAFTA, GATT, CAFTA, now this new Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yes.
These things have been unmitigated disasters for the American workforce. The American worker was American worker had his nuts cut off by the globalists and our politicians who support them. And I'm real sorry, but I'm a victim of this. You know, I had a very lucrative, very high-paying job in the semiconductor industry that doesn't exist today. It's gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's in China now. You know, we haven't built a new wafer fab in this country in probably 20 years. So, you know, how are we going to maintain a position of preeminence in anything without a viable manufacturing infrastructure in this country?
Right.
And so, you know, we need to bring our industry back. We need to close. See, one of the things China got by joining GATT was they got full access to the entire U.S. patent portfolio.
Oh, so, my God.
You know, people don't realize this.
Wow.
But yes, they did. We sort of gave them the whole thing. And so then they wonder about knockoffs and, you know, why did the Chinese do such a good job? It's how could they build things for half the price or a tenth the price of that it cost us? It's not just the cost of labor. It's also the cost of research and development. And they paid nothing for the research and development. We paid for it all. They got that for free. Now, imagine what a competitive advantage that gives a nation if that happens. And, you know, granted, they're making $2 a day. I mean, Apple Computer employs 600,000 people in China. They have over 30 suicides a day in their factories. And, you know, they're working these people to death, literally working them to death so you could have an iPhone or whatever else. And we can do – we have no problems in this country we can't solve. You know, and solve eloquently. We merely have to get the people who are being the obstructions to us solving and creating our own vision for our future. We need to remove them and get on with this. We can talk about a number of things. I mean, you want to bring jobs back to the United States? Put a tariff up on everything coming into the country, 50%. If it's not manufactured in the USA, it's 50% at the port of entry.
Yes.
I don't care whose label's on it. I don't care if it's Apple Computer. I don't care if it's General Motors. I don't care if it's GE. I don't care whose label it is. If it's not made in the United States by an American worker, it's 50% at the gate. And use the revenue from those tariffs to eliminate the IRS and allow the American worker to keep what he earns. That's the constitutional mandate. That's how this country was set up. We were never supposed to have an income tax. We were supposed to fund this country off of tariffs.
Yes, yes, okay. And that's totally illegal again. And of course, again, it's a completely illogical model to have somebody work full-time and take. I mean, if you add up, Mike, all the taxes on food, gasoline, water, even your cell phone now has about a 10% tax on it. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. SDG&E is what we use out here. If you add all of that up, I think we did this one day. This is a while back. And it was something like 63% was taxed.
All right. Do you want to hear something else?
What?
40% of any good that you buy in this country, whether it's a gallon of milk or whether it's an automobile, up to 40% of it is used to pay interest payments, pernicious usury.
Oh, God.
Okay? Because if you're going to put up an automobile factory, you've got to put the capital equipment in, you've got to have the truck to deliver to the dealership, the dealer's got to finance it, you know, you've got to buy it, you've got to finance it. 40% of everything in this country goes to servicing interest on debt.
Oh, my God.
And so it's time to change these things. Like
it
I said,
is.
There aren't any problems we can't solve. We merely need to remove those who are profiting off of human suffering.
Yes.
And that's what prevents us from solving our own problems. I mean, I'm a smart guy, but I'm not the smartest guy in the room. But I can figure this out. How come other people can't figure it out? Come on.
Yeah, human suffering and human sacrifice, you know.
It is. I mean, you look at the other distortions. I mean, you know, there's the American worker has been so decimated, you know, what we used to make in this country. You know, my first job, I always tell the story. I was a dishwasher. I was 14 years old. I made $1.60 an hour. Okay. And you know what? Back then, $1.60 an hour, if it was six quarters and a dime, would be worth about $35 today.
Yeah, not bad.
So you look at how our currency and even the coins in our pocket have been degraded. If you're making $35 an hour today, you're living pretty good. But we've got two things that have hurt the American worker. One of them is this unregulated immigration into this country, mm-hmm. Both legal and illegal. Have really taken the bottom tier of entry-level jobs away from Americans.
Definitely.
Like I said, I was a dishwasher. I couldn't get hired at that job today if I was 14 again because some 35-year-old Mexican guy who's here legally's got that job.
Yeah.
We need to eliminate these distortions to our labor market. Send these people home. They've got a country. You'll go there. Take what you've learned here. Take what you've benefited from being in the U.S. Take it back with you. Change your own country. Let us change ours and manage our own.
Totally
the other thing is this outsourcing and offshoring of jobs to foreign countries where the labor rate is $2 to $5 a day. American workers can't live on that kind of money given the cost structure we have here. It just can't do it. And so, if you would eliminate those two distortions, you would begin to see the American economy begin to recover. Mm-hmm. And these are all things that would be good for the American people. And, everybody, there's no need for us to be stuck in this rut we're stuck in. We can fix this. We could fix all of these problems. We just have to have the will to do what it takes, and so far we haven't been because we've been mesmerized by what they call the idiot box, which is really a wonderful tool of mass hypnosis, and we're told every day that the pretty girls on Fox News tell us everything is fine.
Yeah, no kidding. So, well, now Mike, we're running out of time here, but I want to ask one last question because I know that I usually will receive a couple emails regarding this. What would you say to the question within the audience? How do you distinguish between Israel, Netanyahu, versus those that practice their Judaic faith?
Oh, boy, that's a tough question. First of all, let's look at the two types of Jews that there are. There's Ashkenazi, who are all descendants of the Khazars, who are not true Jews, but Jewish converts in the 7th century, they don't count. And then there's the Sephardic Jews, who are actually the Hebrews of the Bible. The Sephardic Jews are less than 5% of the Jewish population. And Netanyahu is without a doubt a Khazarian. And that's a sticky wicket. This is a sticky thing. And one of the things that people need to realize is that this bloodthirsty Khazarian mafia has been hiding among the general Jewish population for a very long time.
Right.
And no one has been more mistreated and more betrayed by them than the average run-of-the-mill Jewish individual out there,
yes,
who has also been victimized by this Khazarian mafia. And so don't forget that, folks. I mean, that just because they're Jewish doesn't mean they're our enemy. But they could, if they wanted to, they could point out and tell us exactly who the Khazarian mafia is because they're closest to them.
Yes, yes. No kidding. Well, thank you for that succinct answer. And I can't thank you enough. I think, would you be willing to come on again?
Oh, anytime. Just let me know when.
Yeah, I think we should. Maybe we can keep everybody up to date a little bit more on the latest intel. And I really want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for the fact that you are representing as truthful as you can with the information that you're receiving, because it's very sacred. It's very, secretive. It's very, it could literally affect the involvement of one country versus another and how the day plays out around the world. And I'm very aware that you have, you're completely involved at that caliber of the type of journalism that you guys are diving into. So I want to thank veterans today and the courageousness, the fearlessness, and the commitment to truth and excellence. And this is what we should all be doing.
Let me interject something about Veterans Today, because it's not merely a journalistic outlet. Veterans Today is a think tank, and Veterans Today is a very, very large unaffiliated intelligence agency. understand that from the get-go.
Okay.
And that's what our job is. We use the journalistic outlet to propagate the intel that everyone on this planet has a right to know.
Perfect. And that's what the way it should be. So you are paving the way for a lot of other organizations that are desiring to do the same thing in maybe other locations of the world. And so I just, again, want to thank you, Mike. And everyone, if you have a chance, please check out their website if you haven't already done so at veteranstoday.com. And you will see a smattering of articles
Alexandra, let me give you one more thing.
Sure.
Veterans Today is not limited to U.S. veterans. We have veterans from Pakistan. We have veterans from Russia. We have veterans from 60 countries around the world. We have veterans who contribute to Veterans Today because have one thing in common. They've served. They've fought. They've done something. And we understand the problems better than people who don't. And there's a commonality among people who have fought and served.
There's no question about that. And I want to add one more thing. First of all, I'm so stoked to hear that because I think it's fantastic. And secondly, there is just this quality within those who serve in the armed forces, as they call it, that they signed, literally took their signature on the dotted line and said, I am willing to die for my country and my people. That's what they think they're doing.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I'll go back to the Pat Tillman example again because, here's a guy who left a $4.5 million a year NFL football contract in order to go serve his country because he thought we were attacked.
Yes.
And he was murdered by the murder was ordered by General Stanley McChrystal in order to shut him up about his knowledge about the drug trade, the opium trade that has been dominating the operations in the Afghanistan theater. And there is news on this. I'm going to have a guest on my radio show here later on this week who's going to talk about how the Taliban has changed their tactic. They're no longer going after military targets. Now they're going out to eradicate the opium crops. And with the hope that that is going to cause the U.S. occupation to leave.
Good.
So there are some fundamental changes around the world, and this is not just the Taliban, but it's the Pashtun tribe, and it's the Pakistanis who are also supporting this, who want the U.S. out of there because, that's what this is about. It was about controlling the opium trade.
That's fantastic.
And that's one of the largest sources of funding for these dark operations that are run by the CIA. And you know what? Shame on us. Shame on the U.S. Shame on us American citizens for allowing these agencies to get out of control. We need to shoot the rabbit dogs
this
time.
Yes. Well, you guys heard it. Please, again, check out veteranstoday.com.